Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Good morning, listeners. Good morning, diners, winers, travelers around the world and in Pittsburgh, our home. It's Sunday morning here. It's Sunday afternoon in Europe. It's Monday morning in Australia. Welcome to all of you listeners to On the Menu Radio, a sort of recorded radio show about food, wine, travel, and lifestyle. And we have our first guest for the morning already on the line. And she's from Moscow, Idaho. And I surprised her when I talked to her, when I greeted her. I said, I've been in Moscow, Idaho lots of times. Now, it's not the most in-the-way place, is it, Marilyn?
It is not. It's way out of the way.
Now, produce your last name for me, because I'll butcher it for sure.
Okay. In Pennsylvania, where I was born, in Sharon, Pennsylvania, everyone would know me by Marilyn Leisher.
Leisher. And you're from,
yes.
you're from about 100 miles from here. That's amazing.
That's correct. Where I was born and raised, grew up right on Interstate 80 going through Pennsylvania there.
Right. Well, listeners, the most important thing to announce, first of all, is we're bowling for dollars today. So send us an email, the best email about why I love chocolate. We'll get a gift basket from Cowgirl Chocolates. Because
absolutely. We'll be happy to send.
But it's amazing. Uh-huh. Marilyn is the head cowgirl. Aside from being a sculptor and a whole variety of other things, she's also the head cowgirl, and we're here to talk about Cowgirl Chocolates, which has as its corporate slogan, Go Ahead Hotshot. So give us the story. How did this happen, Marilyn?
Well, way back 10 years ago, we were on our 10th anniversary. My brother Bob thought of putting spicy with chocolate. He thought it would make a great new flavor. But everyone didn't think it was a good idea. The chocolate companies in Sharon thought it was a little out of the way. So I thought it was a good idea, though. So I experimented, had all my friends and family try it, and they loved it, and we started to win awards in the fiery food industry with the chocolates we would put cayenne pepper in, and we had truffles and caramels and coconut cups and nut cups, and it caught on. But it did take a while. It wasn't one of those things that was easily acceptable, but right now it is one of those new things, like in the last 3 years, the infusions of pepper and wasabi and curry and all that is becoming very popular in chocolate.
Right. We had a guest maybe a year or so ago who makes fiery beer brittle.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know if you've ever run across that one, but it's more than just a single product. I mean, give our listeners an idea of the range of what you make. I actually was generous enough to give away a package of the popcorn.
How nice. And yes, so our new products for this year are the popcorns, gourmet, handmade here in Moscow, and we have a spicy pumpkin, which is perfect for around this time of the year, a vanilla granola, which doesn't have any spice, and then a spicy chocolate three nut that's wonderful. And we also have roasted hazelnut toffee that has a kick, and we have these really, really spicy caramelized nut cups, which I have made those for people that I call that have the volcano palates out there. These have habanero in them, and they're pretty hot, and they're made with a Venezuelan chocolate, which is absolutely delicious. Our other chocolates are a German chocolate, and they're truffles, and most of them have the cayenne pepper inside the truffle part. And we also have chocolates that do not have the spice for people that love chocolate but cannot tolerate the spicy heats. We have a mini habanero truffle also that's been very popular. We have brittles. We have a peanut butter brittle. We have a three-nut brittle. And then we have a very spicy pistachio brittle that's been award winner and very good.
I think I ate almost the whole container myself, and only about half the truffles are left.
Oh, my goodness! Well, good for you.
The toffees I haven't done yet. I'm a little worried about my teeth.
Oh, it's a great toffee though. It doesn't stick to your teeth. It's just wonderful. And we have dessert sauces. We have a caramel and a chocolate dessert, again with that kick, with the cowgirl kick. And it's wonderful over vanilla ice cream with fresh berries. You can't go wrong with that. And we have cocos also. And we have two that are not spiced.
Oh, my goodness. Cocos, too.
And we have
too.
One that is.
I think the chocolate sauces are heading for our son and daughter-in-law's house because that's the kind of thing they love because they're great dessert eaters. But how do you keep on coming up with these new ideas?
Well, it's fun. It's just absolutely fun. And every year we try to figure out something new that we can offer our customers. And our packaging, if you go online to cowgirlchocolates.com, you'll see that we have really beautiful packaging for the chocolates to make them really special. And we also have, since it's our 10th anniversary, we have a deal where you buy a pound and you get an extra half pound for free. And so there's things that are on there on the website that, are beautiful gifts. And also just if you just want to eat them, you get the nothing fancy. You just get the chocolates in a plastic bag.
There you go. Well, your brother's still in Sharon, and you were in Sharon, but then you went to the University of Idaho.
I went to Wazoo, to Washington State University. I received my master's degree in art there, and it was just such a beautiful area out here that I stayed. But I love Sharon. I love Pennsylvania. You can't take the Pennsylvania out of the girl.
Right.
In fact, our logo, the girl that we have for our logo, is May Lilly, and she's another Pennsylvanian from Philadelphia. And back in the early 1900s, she was a cowgirl that fell in love with Pawnee Bill, who was performing in Philadelphia, and he proposed to her, and then she moved out west and became a sharpshooter and a great trick rider.
Why, sort of like Annie Oakley? Huh?
Annie Oakley and she were in the same show.
And, oh, well, there you go.
And she was the best shot on horseback. She could ride a horse and shoot at targets and get the targets every time. But she was from Pennsylvania, and so I find that kind of interesting. And I guess Moscow, Idaho, was named after Moscow, Pennsylvania. Believe it or not,
I didn't know that. I remember there was a funny show on HBO. I think it was Moscow .. Idaho, and the Russian comedian actually recorded a show on the university campus. I don't know if you were there then.
That'd have been fun.
Now where do you manufacture?
Well, we go through about 10,000 pounds every 9 months, and I have a wonderful company that makes the chocolates for us in that quantity, and they all come pre-wrapped, and then and that's made in Canada. We have a company up there that makes them for us. The brittles and the toffees and the cups, the nut cups and the popcorn, we make here in the States. We have a kitchen that we do those, but the chocolates, because we go through so many of those so quickly, I need help with that. So we have a wonderful company.
Now, who's the inventive genius who keeps on coming up with these wonderful new products all the time?
Well, I would have to say me.
Yeah, there's no need to be modest.
I'll take that credit, but it was with the team. The Cowgirl Chocolate team is absolutely incredible, and right now they're working on a big order that's going up to Canada for Roots Equestrian up there, and so they're busy in the background kind of listening, but we come up with the ideas and then work on the flavor, and the packaging is a very big part of it. It's not just coming up with the idea of what type of thing can we make that's edible, but we need to really make sure that the packaging holds steady also, that it's upscale and wonderful packaging.
Now, you started, your bio says you actually started out making edible sculptures in 1973.
That's correct. That's right. I was in college. It was earlier. I was still in college at Ohio Northern in Ada, Ohio, and Daffin's Candies in Sharon, Pennsylvania. Mr. Pete Daffin, asked me if I would make a 4-foot chocolate rabbit for them. And the process got out of hand, and when I came back to the store, I said, Pete, I made a mistake. You know, how big is the door? And he said, what do you mean, how big is the door? And I said, it's not 4 feet, it's 8 feet. So I was making these large 8-foot to even larger pieces for them, and kids just love them. They would come in, and you'd get little bite marks on the sculptures where the little kids were biting them, and it was just a lot of fun.
And
that was when I was 16, was my first job, and that was in the chocolate company.
That's incredible. And you said you've sent these around the world, including Berlin, Macau, New Zealand, and a particularly interesting place in England.
Yes, the Harry Potter studio in London, England, Harry Potter Road. We were sending chocolates off, and someone there, I think it was one of the assistant directors, was ordering from us. So we were quite excited when we saw Harry Potter studio.
This is an absolute, all of this from Sharon, Pennsylvania, and Moscow, Idaho. Absolutely startling. It goes to prove what, was it Ralph Waldo Emerson said? Or was it somebody else who said, build a better mousetrap and the world will beat a pathway to your door? Something like that.
That's true.
So build, go ahead, hotshot is the slogan. Don't forget, listeners, send your email to onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. And the best email, while of chocolate, will be your chance, and we'll forward your name and address to Cowgirl Chocolates. Marilyn, thank you so much for talking. It's a fascinating business. Now, people can order through the cowgirlchocolates.com website?
Absolutely, and it was a pleasure talking with you, Peter, and hello, Pennsylvania.
Great. So nice to talk to you. Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we'll take a break.
Remember this number, 412-661-6001. Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition, but cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Are you? Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server, co-location facility, and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001.
Welcome back to On the Menu. It's so nice to be with you again this Sunday morning. Anne is still indisposed, but we hope that she's getting better and she'll be back with us again online very soon. If you want to get in touch with us to send her a get well wish, or just because you have something to say, or just because you want to get some free chocolates from Cowgirl Chocolates, so send us an email to onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. We have a new guest, Sherry Burnham, from a company with a very simple name, Grind. Grind.
Hello.
LLC. Sherry, welcome. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, that's terrific. Now, Grind sort of gives it away, but so why don't you give us the elevator version of Grind LLC?
Well, at Grind, we produced really high-end, unique salt and pepper grinders. And we have stainless steel grinders, we have organic, eco-friendly bamboo grinders, and we also have some traditional wood grinders with some unique aspects to them that make them different.
And we met at the Fancy Food Show in New York in July,
uh-huh.
and we had a conversation, and the major reason we had such a long conversation was because we have a problem, because a lot of the salts that we get are rather damp,
mm-hmm.
and they cause the salt grinders to, the metal salt grinders tend to get rusty, or they stick, or they just stop working. And you said, well, I think we'll be able to solve that problem. Tell us how far you've come so far.
Well, we've been working on solving the problem of grinding wet salt. And the problem is twofold. One is corrosion. You know, wet salt tends to corrode traditional carbon steel grinders, which is what most traditional grinders are made from. And then there is a solution to that, which is a ceramic grind. But the wet salt seems to get stuck in the area where if it was dry, it would come down to the bottom and grind. But the problem with the sea salt, the wet kind, is that it kind of gums up and sticks to the sides of the barrel of the grinder. So we're working on a revolutionary new sea salt grinder that should prove to solve this problem.
But in the meantime, this is a top of the line product. I mean, why are your grinders so much better than everybody else's? I mean,
we have a lifetime guarantee in all of our grinding mechanisms.
But how can you do that?
Because they don't break.
They don't break. I mean, no. That's what you told us. I guess I believe we did buy one from a spice shop. Name starts with P. And it supposedly has a lifetime warranty on it. And ours is about 3 years old. And I think the only reason that we haven't taken it back is we can't find the sales slip, because it's not going to last a lifetime. What is it? Is it just the loving care that goes into the production, or what's the secret?
Yeah, we really pride ourselves on high quality products, and I think if you've seen some of our products, they're very unique. There's nothing else on the market like it. And so that makes them a great gift for the hard-to-buy-for person.
Oh, no, they are quite the most splendid, stylish-looking things. Now, we have two, and I got them confused. There's a light-colored wood one, and I understand that that's not the bamboo one.
No, there's wood, and then there's bamboo, and the bamboo actually look like a stalk of bamboo.
Okay, but it's quite dark-colored. Is that the one? I mean, that is the one I think you sent us two. You sent us a pop-top salt mill with a stainless bottom in olive.
Uh-huh.
And then you sent us a Bangkok salt mill in black.
Yes.
And that one's bamboo.
That one is bamboo, yes. Now we have four different colors of bamboo.
Oh, I see. Okay. So is it naturally different colors, or do you actually do something to produce a different color?
They're actually stained bamboo, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
We have a natural bamboo that's a natural color, and then we have red, green, and black.
Now, how did this company get started?
You know, it was started by two waiters in Vail, Colorado. And as you know, Vail has some magnificent restaurants.
Sure.
And they were frustrated with the traditional kind of, you know, grind your wrist to death when you go over to a table. And they came up with our signature Conway mill, which is the one-handed spring-action stainless steel mill.
Oh, right. I think we have a version of that. I'm sure it's not as good as yours, but we did get the one where you push on the end.
Yep. We were actually the first people to bring that to the United States, that particular style of grinder.
Now, when you say you brought it to the United States, are they actually made somewhere else?
Yes.
You want to tell us where? Oh, is it a secret?
They're made in Taiwan.
They're made in Taiwan. Okay, there you go. Now, we talked about another famous pepper grinder maker called Vic Firth, who got into the wood business making drumsticks.
Yes.
Now, is there an angle like that behind grind?
Well, actually, the owner of Grind is in the metals business. So this stainless steel grinder, which is our first types of grinders that we sold, they're particularly high quality because the metals that is imported, there's a lot of connections there with the metals business.
Okay, there you go. And you mentioned Vail, Colorado. Is Vail where Kelly Lycan has a restaurant?
Yes, Kelly Lycan is here, absolutely.
Right. Anne actually wrote an article about Kelly for the local newspaper, a chef profile, because as you probably know, if you know her at all, she was actually born and raised in Pittsburgh, and her parents still live here in Pittsburgh, I think.
Yes, I actually have spoken with her many times. It's a small community here in Vail, so.
Well, we were trying to get to the Aspen Food and Wine Festival, which we did not do this year. It was a really big year. I think it was the 20th anniversary or something like that. But we definitely have the Aspen Food and Wine Festival in our sights. Certainly come to Vail at the same time. Is it really as beautiful as everybody says it is?
It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, and we design all of our mills here, and I think part of our inspiration comes from the locale.
Yeah, funnily enough, a previous guest is from Moscow, Idaho. Which is not nearly as well known as Vail and about the same size. Now, you said you're talking with your manufacturers and trying to work on this moist salt issue.
Yes, we have several designs. We're having a creative meeting in November, and we're hoping to launch our new salt mill, wet salt mill, next year.
I am guessing that we still have a few listeners out there who think that salt comes in a dark blue box.
Yeah. I'm sure.
And the one you want, which is dietarily sound, is the one that has iodine in it.
Yes, I'm sure. Why didn't
you start converting those? People who are still left with their feet in the dirt, feet of clay, I guess. Why don't we convince them that freshly grinding salt is what you really ought to do?
Well, and there are so many incredible types of salt, and any salt that is dry, we can grind in our grinders now, ceramic grinders, they grind extremely well.
But you have to buy a special kind of salt to grind.
Yes, and there's many, many different kinds. There's the Hawaiian sea salt, which is very popular. It's actually a red color.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, in fact, we had some guests on a few months ago who actually import salts from around the world. They source unusual salts and then they import them. But they're already ground and chunky and ready to serve. So when somebody's looking for salt to put in a grinder, what do they buy?
Well, you definitely want to get a coarse grain.
Okay.
You know, sea salt, not already a fine grind one. And there's Mediterranean sea salt, which is many people pride that as a salt that has the most minerals in it, so it's very healthy.
Okay, yes, yeah, right. So what we're looking for here, listeners, is specialty salts that because of the area that they occur in have some natural coloring and some kind of other mineral content that makes it taste slightly different and beautifully piquant, I guess would be the right way to describe it.
Yes, and there is a distinct flavor depending on where the salt is harvested in the world.
And then the other wonderful thing about the relatively coarse ground salt is that you get this wonderful surprise when you're eating salad or when you're eating something else that you wanted to salt in that way. You get a whole crystal between your teeth and you snap it and you get this wonderful surge of salty flavor.
Yeah,
and
that's why we like
to grind our own salt. That's the process. It's really curious. When we started out buying salt mills, we were buying them as gifts for relatives in England who had never heard of such a thing as a salt mill. We used to buy, I guess there were pewter salt and pepper mill sets, and we exported quite a number of sets. And then, of course, they had the challenge next, well, where in England do I find coarse salt to put in them? But they managed to do that, and they all seemed to enjoy them. But all of those salt mills have gone the way of salt mills that aren't manufactured to the same standard as grind. Eventually they fail. That doesn't happen with grind LLC salt mills. So is it as simple as I just say my salt mill isn't working anymore, and you say send it back and I send you another one?
Absolutely. Yep. And you can go on our website, which is grindpepper.com, and check out the different products that we have.
Great. Now, what's the latest in the pepper space? You're probably an expert on peppers too, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So are you seeing any unusual new products?
As far as pepper grinders?
A pepper grind is only useful if you've got interesting pepper to put in it.
You know, there is some incredible pepper. I really like green pepper.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It is a very mild
Oh, taste. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, it's all the same plant. I understand it's all the same plant.
Yes.
It's all the same plant, and eventually it becomes black. But if you pick it early, it's green. And green peppercorns, I guess, go in two different directions. One, they're dried. And in the other process, they're brined, you wouldn't grind them in a fit because they wouldn't grind very well. We did come across a very interesting pepper, and I don't know if you know anything about this one. It was originally introduced to us as Tasmanian pepper,
mm-hmm.
and whether it's restricted to the island state in Australia of Tasmania, I'm not sure. We were talking to somebody about this the other day, and he said he thought it was just known as native Australian pepper. But it's unusual in that it's soft.
Now, it's
actually soft. At least every time we've seen it, it's been relatively soft, so it must not be dried in quite the same way as conventional peppercorns. I think it's a different kind of plant. Now, would you be able to grind something like that in one of your mills, do you think?
Well, I think with the stainless steel mills, that would be possible because we definitely grind spices and spice blends in those mills.
Oh, okay. All right. So
people like to, create their own kind of spice blends because the spice blends that are found in traditional supermarkets tend to get stale quickly.
Okay.
And so a new trend that I've seen is just creating your own gourmet rubs and spice blends and putting them in our stainless steel mills. And that works great.
Oh, I never even thought about that. What a wonderful idea that is. Listeners, you learn something new on this program. Not only where to get true lifetime guarantee, highly fashionable pepper and salt mills from Grind, but also what to do with them. A whole new idea of grinding your own spices without a mortar and pestle, I guess, which is ordinarily the way you would have done it.
Yep.
Sherry, it was a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your contribution. Thank you so much for letting our listeners know about your excellent range of products. And listeners, we will give you an update on the moist salt problem sometime within the next few months when Sherry gets back to us. Sherry, I'm sure you'll let us know.
I will let you know for sure.
Thank you. Have a great day. And
thank you so much too.
Joining us. Mm-hmm. And we'll take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Peter with On the Menu Radio, www.onthemenuradio.com, and by email, onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. And we've already done chocolate and all kinds of delicious things like that, but with a hint of spice. Then in the next segment, we did salt. Upcoming segment, we met some interesting people and dealt with something at a gourmet level that I had never done before, and that's called coffee.
I'm at 11 with Bill Ford, but doing something different than usual, because this is a restaurant, but we're here talking about coffee, because Erica Hess from Pete's Coffee and Tea Company is in town, and Erica's been a coffee educator for 11 years with Pete's Coffee, and it's really very special coffee. First of all, welcome to Pittsburgh, Erica. It's been so nice talking to you, and I'm going to allow our listeners to find out things about coffee they never even knew they needed to know about. First of all, tell me about what Pete's stands for.
Well, Pete's was started in 1966 in Berkeley, California, and it was founded by Alfred Pete, who had a point of view about coffee. Select the highest quality beans, so sourcing is critical, and in this case we source Arabica, hand roast them, and using an artisan technique to bring out all of the flavors of the beans. The beans come from different parts of the world, so we want to be able to bring out those flavors. And then getting them out the door the same day, so a freshness commitment so that our customers can enjoy coffee as fresh as possible.
Now the story goes that the people who founded Starbucks, quite a lot of coffee stores now, actually learned the business from Mr. Pete.
That is indeed correct, actually, and they aren't the only ones that sought his advice and mentorship. He is regarded as a grandfather of specialty coffee. He recently passed away, but over the years, he has taught many roasters across the country. They would come to him and seek his guidance and learn the art of roasting, understanding sourcing, and
did he resent the fact that the Starbucks people were so successful, or did it make it?
No, because again, he had a different point of view around what quality coffee should be, what it should taste like, and how it should be roasted. Very different companies with different points of view, and he maintained that, and it's something that we felt, continues to inspire us today. So those are really the principles by which we continue to basically honor what he taught us.
Now, Pete's goes out and really finds special coffees, unusual coffees. That's what you were talking about.
We do, actually. We have a selection of 32 available through our website and our mail order in our retail stores. But we're always, because coffee is grown cyclically, depending on harvest throughout the year, depending on country of origin, we are always sourcing different coffees throughout the year. Our coffee buyers might have 30 samples a day, 5 days a week that they're going through, always looking for really rare finds. And we have our single origin coffees, we have our signature blends, which are, a blend, it could be a blend of coffees from one particular country of origin or a blend of multiple countries of origin. We also have rare lots. Right now we're featuring Panama Esmeralda, which is a very unique rare lot, one production lot and we were able to purchase 50 bags direct from the producer. And what's so unique about it was that originally it's an heirloom from Ethiopia. It's a Yirgacheffe coffee, but it's actually cultivated in Panama in the highlands above 6,000 feet. So you're getting these wonderful flavors out of it that are inherent because of its lineage, but also now that it's grown in Panama, you know, for example, Panama coffee can be very citrusy and lively. So you're getting a balance of all these flavors going on in that one particular coffee.
Now, you said 50 bags, but you also told me earlier on that they only had 200 bags, so you bought a quarter of the whole supply.
Yes, and I think it's a result of our direct relationship with the grower. Last year, they only produced 50, and we bought all of them. This year, they were able to produce more, and of course, there's so much attention around it that a lot of other roasters were very interested in this particular coffee.
You tasted another blend. Blending is interesting. You might just quickly explain the blend, and then tell us about this character called Major Dickerson.
Certainly. Well, another thing that Pete's is known for is basically our blends, and we take the same care in terms of how we roast an individual coffee, and we apply it to how we roast our blends. Sometimes blends are components that we can take the beans from different parts of the world and blend them together. Other times we'll roast them individually and then blend them together. But again, the same hand roasting method is applied, again, trying to coax the flavors out of the beans. Most companies use a computer to what they call profile roast, but we're, again, calling out the flavor of the beans. Again, because of the buyers constantly coming across samples every day, cupping, they're always thinking about, would this be a great standalone coffee or would it make a nice component to a blend? So we are able to, as coffees come to us, be able to create these blends. Sometimes there's very limited availability, but we also have some permanent blends on our menu.
But Mr. Dickerson, who was actually a captain rather than a major, apparently he actually blended this himself.
He did, actually. Key Dickerson was a longtime friend and customer of Mr. Pete's, and he would frequent the original store. But he was a captain in the Army, but on the weekends he liked to do what many of our customers do, and that is to create their own blends of our coffees. So he very boldly, and I don't know if it was because of the friendship, but had the confidence to present his blend to Mr. Pete, and Mr. Pete decided to check this blend out and thought it was worthy of introducing. He made a few slight tweaks to it, but introduced it as Major Dickerson's blend, giving Mr. Dickerson a promotion.
Since we have an expert here, I thought we'd ask her, how do you go about making coffee the right way?
Well, first of all, you have to start with fresh beans, whole bean coffee. You want to also make sure that you have filtered water, freshly drawn. And a couple of other accessories, a grinder, preferably a burr grinder, but a blade grinder is fine too. Start with the whole bean coffee. It's fresh. You want to grind fresh because that's releasing a lot of those nice flavors out of the bean. And then you measure carefully. The recommendation we like to share with customers is 2 tablespoons for every 6 ounces of water.
So a 32-ounce Bourdon press machine would take?
About 5 2-tablespoons or 10 tablespoons.
Fantastic.
Exactly.
And the temperature of the water?
Great question. Basically, you start with fresh water. You bring it to a boil, but you let it sit for about 20 to 30 seconds before you actually pour and saturate your coffee grounds. And the reason you want to do that is because if you pour boiling water directly to your coffee grinds, you're going to cause an over-extraction and your coffee can taste better.
Which is, of course, exactly what I do, so I'm going to change that starting tomorrow. And what's the time before you do the press?
Well, the time from when you start pouring the water to the time you press all the way down, it's roughly 3 minutes. Some people go a little higher, some people go a little lower. Again, it's all about taste and preference.
Yeah, I mean, somebody told me 5. I'm going to change that too, starting tomorrow. since I'm from an expert, I should certainly follow a direction. We talked about some do's and don'ts of coffee. Can you remember what those were?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, a lot of people ask about storage. So basically, what you want to do is store your whole beans in an airtight container in a cool, dry, dark place, a pantry or cupboard. This protects the coffee from the staining effects of light, air, and moisture. Again, all about flavoring your cup at the end of the day. You also, if you're going to refrigerate, though, store it in an airtight container. If you can buy frequently, that's also ideal, but the again, storing in an airtight container will help continue to preserve the freshness.
But there's a don't in here, right? Don't?
Don't put it in the freezer. That you don't want to do. Again, condensation, the back and forth in the freezer, just will impart a lot of different flavors. It'll actually increase the staling effect of the coffee.
Okay, how about another do or don't?
Well, do grind fresh. That's always recommended. And again, it just really allows for the coffee, the flavor of the coffee to come out when you're grinding fresh. Don't reboil your water. That's another trick too. When you're bringing your water to boil, it has to be freshly drawn. Then rest your kettle from 20 to 30 seconds. Don't. Some people basically use reboiled water.
And if you want to heat the coffee, don't.
Don't reheat it. Don't reheat it at all. Ideally, if you're going to brew, however method, you might want to brew only what you're going to really drink, which is why the recipe is helpful. But if you're brewing larger amounts and want to drink for 30 minutes or so, either transfer it to a thermal air pot so it'll continue to keep it warm without overcooking it. Or if you have an automatic coffee maker, a coffee machine, oftentimes they're now making them with thermal carafes so that they pour directly into a thermal carafe and will keep it nice and warm.
So no microwave.
No microwave, no reheating, no cooking of the coffee.
How would you go about selecting the coffees that you like?
You know, much like wine, it comes down to some personal preferences. But if you want to try a coffee company that you may have not tried before, it's always good to start with a basic coffee, a house blend. But if you are one that is really interested in fuller-bodied coffees, you can certainly try something that is fuller, richer. We have a selection that we'll be offering at Giant Eagle that's a nice range for people who don't, you know, just getting started with specialty coffee to people who are very familiar with coffee or our existing customers where they can actually enjoy something fuller and rich.
You talked about the ultimate in coffee experience, which is aged coffee. It sounds unbelievable that would be something that would be good.
Well, there are a lot of different types of coffees out there, but in addition to some of the what I'll call the basic coffee offerings we have, we have blends. Blends can be very enjoyable because there's so many different beans going on. So you're getting a lot of different, a blending of flavors. And for someone who really enjoys that, it could be a blend of coffees from one particular area of the world or a blend of coffees from different parts of the world.
But coffee kept 3 to 5 years in green state?
Well, that's an unusual type of coffee. An aged coffee, generally, what will happen there, and they're rare in their own right because you don't come across them very often, and then they're just a very limited supply. What happens usually is a grower will set aside a section of his or her, because there are women growers out there, who set aside a section of their lot or production crop, and they'll let it sit for about 3 to 5 years. And in areas such as the Indo-Pacific, there's some nice humidity, and it lends to sort of the maturation of the green bean. And then what will end up happening in your cup when we roast it, you're going to get a wonderful, woodsy, almost oaky taste. It's not for everybody, but it is definitely a taste that for someone who's a coffee connoisseur and wants to try and hasn't, I highly recommend it.
So you can buy through the website, which is?
Peets.com, that's PEETS.com.
And you can buy in Giant Eagle and in our geography?
Yes,
and
definitely.
And through other departments. Is there a store locator on the website?
There is a store locator. We have about 150 stores, primarily on the West Coast. We do have a few, 6 of them actually, in the greater Boston area, so if people are visiting there, it's a nice way to learn more about Peets. We do a lot of great tastings and interaction with our customers in our stores. But they're also in the grocery, we'll have a selection of what we feel are the nice range of our coffees for different people with different tastes and just different levels of coffee experience to try.
Erica, thank you so much for talking to us. The last thought on coffee?
Remember to drink it. Remember, fresh roasted beans, grind fresh, and drink fresh.
And we'll take a break now.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg.
personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high-speed, low-cost, always-on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Well, welcome back to On the Menu. Don't forget that by going to the OTM audio archives on our website, you can listen to all the programs since October of 2005, almost 2 years of excellent programs, and we hope that you'll do that often. And of course, we're adding to them all the time. Every program we now add goes on the website as soon as it's aired, and it's available to you to reference there too. Continuing on, I mentioned at the beginning of the last interview segments with Pete's Coffee that we were actually at Pittsburgh Restaurant 11 with Big Burrito corporate chef Bill Fuller, who actually produced some desserts to go along with the coffee that we're drinking. So we couldn't miss the opportunity to talk to our old friend Bill.
Bill Fuller makes some wonderful desserts from his wonderful pastry kitchen here at 11 to go along with the coffee. So I thought Bill ought to have an opportunity to talk about what the tasting experience was like.
Because I don't have enough opportunity to talk. I don't give enough opportunity to talk. So we talked about tasting three coffees, the Pete's Panama, Esmeralda Geisha, Sumatra, which I'm a big fan of and I drink at home, and the Major Dickinson's, which smells like Berkeley. The Major Dickinson smells like Berkeley. So to go with the Esmeralda, it's a complex flavor. There's some citrus pine notes. There's some neat stuff going on. I thought our blackberry tart would go great with that. The banana or the Sumatra. I mean, the first dessert I looked at was the banana cream pie because it's tropical and the Sumatra's tropical. And I don't know, it just seemed to make sense. And then with the Major Dickinson's, that coffee, I know that coffee, and I know it doesn't do. It's not going to survive anything with chocolate. So we tried it with our chocolate caramel candy bar that we've been doing lately here at 11, and it was a blast. Eric and I are here eating and tasting. The neatest thing I thought was how the geisha sort of attenuated and smoothed all the flavors of all the desserts. Were you expecting that?
No, actually, I wasn't. I just figured, you know, one of the things I'm always looking for is sort of a nice balance where, you know, there's a citrusy flavor coming through, and it's so delicate, and so usually when I think about it, it's nicely paired with something that has that too. So the blackberry tart was a wonderful pairing. But just as we were tasting and playing around and mixing and matching coffees to the desserts, it was a nice discovery to find out that, and I think it's because of the texture and the delicateness of it, it really paired well with all three desserts. And I was actually surprised with the candy bar, the chocolate caramel candy bar, how well it went with it.
Because I thought the chocolate would just pave it.
Right.
And it didn't. It just, they worked together. And the chocolate made the coffee better, and the coffee sort of softened up the hard edges that can be in chocolate. Not that the chocolate's unpleasant, and it just was really a neat combination.
Yeah, it really was surprising to me, and I think what was really the big aha was just how well they complemented each other. Nothing overpowered the other, and if anything, they enhanced the flavors.
So do you think this is going to be a trend of the future, Bill?
I think
coffee with dessert will be a thing in restaurants?
I think that it would be a blast to be able to sit in a restaurant and have three little dessert tastings, each with three coffees. I don't know that we're going to be doing it right away. It would be something that would be fun to play with in the future. Because this sort of tasting thing is not even, it's not even worth being at the end of a meal. Like, this is sort of an event that you would do by itself. I can't see being at the end of a two-hour meal and paying attention to this. It's the middle of the afternoon and we're talking about it. So, but it is, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for sharing the fun, Bill and Erica, once again.
And no program should be complete without a taste of Southern cooking, so if you don't think we've been in enough places already today, we're going to go to the fine city of Greenville, South Carolina, to a restaurant called High Cotton. I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, who think that South Carolina perhaps is the other side of the universe and you wouldn't want to go there, downtown Greenville has undergone an absolutely wonderful restoration, and right in the middle of it is a spectacular restaurant called High Cotton, established by the owners of a High Cotton restaurant in Charleston that we've been to before. But we were there a couple of months ago, and we caught up with the chef at this wonderful establishment, and we asked him to talk about what he's doing in Greenville.
On the menu is at High Cotton. Not in Charleston, however, but in Greenville, South Carolina. And our executive chef, Jason Schultz, is going to explain where we are. Where are we, Jason?
We're in Greenville, South Carolina. It's known in South Carolina as the Upstate.
Yeah. And why are we here?
We are here because we have opened up another High Cotton restaurant, in addition to the one that we've got in Charleston, South Carolina. We've decided to leave the safe compounds of Charleston and venture to the Upstate for the first time.
And now this place is just gorgeous. Now, we've seen this before in Greenville, but could you describe the whole river, the Reedy River development, and how this is positioned so that the views are so spectacular from every single level of this restaurant?
Well, we are located right on the Reedy River, and Greenville was a textile town for years and years and years, and as that kind of got pushed out of the area and out of the region, we were left with all these mills along the Reedy River here, and they were starting to almost fall into the river, really. So a few people with some great ideas decided to do the River Place development right here along the Reedy, and it was a blank canvas, really, to just redo the city almost and reinvigorate it.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. The falls And how did you get this building? I mean, it's new, right?
It is a new building. We are a brand new development. The people who developed the space really liked what we were doing at High Cotton in Charleston, and they wouldn't take no for an answer.
Well, you have, what, 35-foot ceilings?
35 or 40, I think, actually.
40.
Yeah.
And it's tri-level?
It is three levels. It's our first restaurant that's got elevators in it.
Uh-huh.
Which posed some new challenges for us.
Oh, what kind of challenges?
Soufflés and elevators don't get along very well at all, are one thing that we discovered.
That's pretty funny.
Soufflés don't like to go on long trips. They like short commutes.
Yes. Now, there are a number of different dining options, and each one, of course, with this wonderful view of the river. Describe some of these rooms.
Well, the room we're in right now is called the Boardroom, you know, and this is my favorite room, actually, that we're in. That's why I'm glad we're here today. I think it affords the best views of, really, of the whole restaurant. You can see downstairs, you see out into the river, you see across the river. We've got some great views, but we really tried to focus on having several different rooms that could hold several different venues at one time, be it off the menu or if somebody wanted to come in and do something private here as well. We wanted to be multifunctional so we could host and cater to a wide variety of clients at the same time.
I mean, it's a huge cavernous space in the raw, but it's been designed so that the space is broken up into very comfortable, and they can be very private segments as well. And I imagine that it gets pretty lively since you have entertainment 7 nights a week. You're open for dinner 7 nights a week and for brunch on Sundays, and entertainment, jazz, what else?
There can be a whole lot going on, you know, with the bar and four different dining spaces. You know, the place gets pretty lively sometimes. You know, I think that being able to host so many things at one time really does make it a unique restaurant, though, and that's one of the unique things about the space for sure. And when you walk in here on a Friday night and you walk under our doorway, which is kind of narrow and not very tall, and you walk out into the bar, then you can see how many different things are around you in the restaurant. It really kind of blows people away when they see the space.
I love it. And I love the artwork, which is great. And, of course, it's all very sleek and modern and decor. You came up the ranks with Maverick Kitchens. So tell us a little bit. What is Maverick Kitchens?
Well, Maverick Southern Kitchens operates three restaurants currently in the Charleston area right now. In addition to a inn, and we also have a store called Charleston Cooks, where people can buy gadgets and cooking gear, yeah. But they can also take you know, classes from anything from shrimp and grits to intensive classes that might last 8 classes long, where you're really involved in classic stock and sauce making, things along those lines.
But how did a Kentucky boy like you end up in Charleston?
It was time for a change. I wanted to see someplace besides Louisville. There were some great restaurants there, and I cut my teeth in some good places. But I thought that Johnson & Wales in Charleston might be a good fit for me. So without even making one visit to Charleston, I saw two people on a brochure in front of the beach. My friend and I packed our car, and we came down to Charleston.
Jason, so you land in Charleston, and it has to have been a very different environment from Louisville.
It was completely different. There was no hills. There was all humidity and no hills. But, you know, at the same time, that's what I wanted. Something was totally different than what I had seen and growing up in.
Yeah, and I guess there's a big hole now that they don't have Johnson & Wales there anymore.
No, it's gone. But, you know, it's still there in a lot of ways. A lot of the people that moved to Charleston to go to school ended up staying there. And they've come, you know, they've done a lot for the community as far as culinary arts go, and it's an anchor still that's not going to go anywhere.
Well, it's an exciting restaurant town. And we actually, one of your mentors, you worked under Frank Lee for this group, and we interviewed him. It was one of the most fun interviews we ever had. What was he like working for?
He was interesting. At first, I was a little scared, a little intimidated my first time away from home, and then I'm under the impression that I'm working for this really strict, stern, old-school, inspired chef. And after the years, you see the layers kind of start to peel away. But, you know, at first, it was a ritual almost that I had to go through to really get to where I wanted to ultimately be. It was a great experience. I met some of the best people that I've ever met in my whole life working there, who are scattered around the country now. And I also, as a result of working there, met my wife as well. So,
now, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How recently were you married?
October of last year.
Well, that's, you're coming up to an anniversary.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, I understand that the menu is pretty much the same here as in Charleston. Describe what kind of menu this is.
Well, both restaurants do have the same menu, but we are based on the company-wide concept is trying to find local things and sustain those local, you know, those local items. You know, we both have a chicken item on the menu, you know, a roast chicken, but, you know, our chickens are from a local guy who raises them around here, and down there, they're using a local guy who raises them there. Same, you get eggs in every day, you know, I get eggs in from a local person here. They're the same, you know, focus concept where they want to get local things in on a daily basis. So both menus are the same. Some of the ingredients are different because we're in different cities, but we do try to maintain the same menu.
I hope your oysters are coming from the same place. They're not coming from the Reedy River, maybe?
No oysters from the Reedy River.
I've been throwing shrimp nets out there since I got here 9 months ago and haven't gotten one thing yet. There are some nice ducks out there, though.
You have your eye on the ducks.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to tell them. Now, what would have you had a chance to develop your own kind of little quirks and twists and style?
Yeah, I think that I have. You know, you never really stop developing those kind of things. And really, I've just been starting over the last 5 or 6 years to really have my own feelings and thoughts about how things really should be in a kitchen. You know,
can you share some of those?
Well, it all starts off, I think, that every chef is responsible for trying to find as many local things as they can and use those. And, you know, if it's not the best, you know, I'm sure that our produce isn't as good as it is in Napa Valley all year long. But it's even more challenging that way, you know, to find something that's good and local. You know, it might not be perfect, but it's local, and it's your responsibility to learn how to turn that into a perfect thing.
Now, do you spend a lot of time with farmers and growers?
I have started to find some farmers and growers here. I did a lot of exploring in the months before we opened up. And now that we're open, a lot more people are starting to come by the restaurant. People will come by and, you know, they've got whole lambs, whole pigs, turkeys, chickens, and a lot of good, interesting produce as well.
And what's coming next?
Next is, it's going to be really my first time in the upstate for fall when the restaurant's open. And fall's always been my favorite time of the year to cook. I love squashes. I love pumpkins. You know, I love a little bit of colder weather kind of food. I like to braise things a lot, things that are roasted. So I really like that season. In Charleston, a great place Charleston is, but it doesn't really have the seasonality like we have here in the upstate. So I'm very excited about being able to embrace a season and actually see leaves change color on a tree, you know, and be able to kind of feel the season instead of just the calendar sets a different season, but actually physically be involved with a seasonal change.
Well, I'm really looking forward to dinner tonight. What might we be having?
I would suggest anything on the menu right now. Right now, we changed our menu just recently, and we're getting great raves on our Carolina Race trout. It comes from North Carolina right next to us up in the mountains. There's several great trout farms there, and the trout's getting pretty good reviews right now. One thing I would definitely recommend is our charcuterie plate. We call it the butcher's plate, which, you know, charcuterie is butchering in French, essentially. And we take a lot of pride in that, homemade sausages, terrines.
You cure these yourself?
We do make all those in-house, yes. And it's a great way to start the meal.
Peter's already voted for that one. Well, anyhow, I can hardly wait. I hope oysters are on the menu tonight.
The fried oysters are on the menu. Always. They've been on there since day one.
Well, you sound like you're having a really wonderful time, and we've had a good time talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
The funny part about it is the chef talked about being an understudy to Chef Frank Lee at slightly north abroad in Charleston, and wouldn't you know who was in the restaurant that evening when we were having dinner but Frank Lee himself. So he sat down to chat with us. We had a wonderful time, like old friends. And just like old friends, we'll see you same time, same place next week.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.